The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Better believe it. Good morning, everyone. A Saturday, excuse my voice, April 27, 2024. It's snowing outside. Welcome to April in Colorado. 710 KNUS, thanks for being here. Weather Center goes like this. Well, it's going to change around now. They're saying this one thing, but now it's just snowing. 42, allegedly, is where we go. I don't think so. 32 tonight, 57 on Sunday. Without further ado, if I had favorites in this business, these are the guys. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Joe the Hitman Williams and Sandy Clough. You guys, thank you so much for saving the show, and welcome back on a Saturday.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure, saving the show.
You got to.
You sound like you needed a shot of Spiritus Rumenti.
Well, in the old days, you know, I'll tell people I'm allergic to alcohol. I'm allergic to alcohol. When I drink, I break out in felonies.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing? We haven't spoken. Joe, you're good?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. For advancing age, it's called advancing age. I'm doing good. Sandy will be young forever.
You know, he will be. Sandy will be young, forever young. And, of course, both of these guys had great careers in the radio business and still work. And I'm such a fan of both of them, and they're dear friends. And so I wanted to sort of take a break in the action from the other part of talk. And I've been reading this stuff, and I have, you know, I have no business talking about sports because I don't know anything about sports. But the Deion Sanders up at CU, and boy, things are changing. So let's begin with Joe first, if we could, on this one. Joe, what's going on in Boulder?
Well, the spring game is today. Now, if it's anything like it was last year, half the guys that play it, it'll be gone by Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've all three of us at one time or another been caught in the revolving door of Denver radio.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
If you're a football player up there, you know, don't look behind you, because that's exactly what happens. They run them in and out of their fast. I can't keep up with it. I don't know about Sandy, but the win loss, people say, well, this is the year he's got to win games. I don't think it really matters, because I think he'll be gone at the end of the football season. His daughter, I think, has already hit the transfer portal, and this will be the last year for his other kids on the team. So what I think is going on is he's making plans for where he's going to go next, and it ain't going to be in Boulder.
You know, Joe, you have, to your credit, you said that right away. You said this is a stop along the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't see anything. I haven't seen anything to suggest otherwise. He has no loyalty to CU, and that's fine, because he never professed to. They're the ones that went out and got him, and, you know, it was a great this time last year. I mean, it was a hell of a story. And, I mean, I think ESPN, didn't they televise the spring game, I think, last year?
They did.
In Boulder?
They did.
I think they did. I don't see anything mentioned about them doing that this year.
Well, no, they're covering the draft this year, but the Pac-12 network, talk about ironies, the Pac-12 network will cover the scrimmage today.
So,
because technically CU is still a member of the Pac-12.
Yeah, there's no Pac-12 anymore. That's great.
Sandy, what's
at
happening?
At least until July 1st, there is, I suppose, technically a Pac-12. So in the absence of any other interest in the scrimmage today, the Pac-12 will jump in. And if you have access to the Pac-12, you can watch, although I don't know how much they'll be able to get done in this weather. But I agree completely with Joe, and I've come around on this a little bit. I just don't know where his next destination would be, because when you look at what took place last year, The reality is they lost 8 of their last 9 games. The reality is they've lost at least 31 scholarship players to the transfer portal. And these guys left. Last year, Dion ran them off. This year, these guys are leaving. And these guys, in some cases, are players who either at the end of the year or throughout the season were starting players for Colorado last year. And at least as of now, Sanders, of course, has always promised this will change in the coming days and weeks, but they've lost more than they brought in.
What does that say, Joe, about the direction of the CU Buffs? Because remember, we talked about it. I had my nephews would try and buy CU merchandise, or all these Coast guys, and it was sold out. They'd go to, you know, one of those stores that sells hats or
jackets. That was, I mean, you got to, Pete, here's the deal. Their program had been down for so long. And I mean, people who had season tickets for years and years finally had given up. They had to do something. And I'll give credit to Rick George. They hired him, and it made such a splash. He's one of the best self-promoters that ever lived, obviously. And it put them back on the map without them having to be a football-winning team. They didn't have to go out and win to get fans. You know, it was kind of a combination of Dion fans, and he kind of plugged in there to the whole thing. And suddenly CU was – I mean, they were everywhere. They weren't just on sports stations. Hell, they were on the CBS Nightly News. Oh, yeah. We all saw it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a happening. And it did put them back up there. And without having to win games, and they're not going to win any games this year. They may win 3 or 4. But this year, though, unlike last year, there is no splash. I think people will lose interest fairly early, especially once they get wind that he's going to be leaving. And if I'm CU right now, I'm figuring out what's the next step here. Where do we go next? Because for years, I mean, they haven't gotten it right since Gary Barnett.
Wow.
And period, they just haven't. And where they go next, I don't know. I don't think they're going to sell a lot of merchandise, though.
No, that's off. Let me ask a question for people that are like myself. The portal that we hear now about, the portal all the time. Does the portal work for the athletes? Does it work for the coaches? Does it work for the school? And Sandy, how does the portal work?
That's a good question, because there are no real rules, regulations, inhibitions. I read this, I think I understood this to be correct the other day. There are actually more women athletes in the portal than there are men athletes in the portal, but it's true with football on the collegiate level. It's true with basketball. The women's game, certainly, even the top teams are losing people to the portal. CU basketball has lost people to the portal. Tad Boyle, who is the anti-Deion Sanders, wants to build a program through recruiting. Deion doesn't even want to make visits to high school. And his initial explanation for that was that he was saving the university money.
And? That's just dot, dot, dot.
That seems like a pretty lame excuse for being too consumed with his book tours and various speaking engagements to get out and actually recruit people. And the idea that this is somehow a workable strategy for team building is preposterous. And I think even he knows that. But he's a salesman. And as I've said all along, one thing to his credit that is undeniable is that he provided last year, through his mere presence, a tremendous financial uplift, a real financial boon, not only for the university, but for the city of Boulder. That is undeniable.
Is he going to?
But I think much of that is gone The coverage now of him is a little more balanced, maybe even critical at times. And, you know, he seems to revel in that, I suppose. I think he's one of those people who almost invents critics or sets up straw men. And yet the reality is that he doesn't understand the concepts of team building. He doesn't understand beyond paying attention to 15, 20 people on his team, the value of communication and of psychology and of culture within a team. You can't have a team culture. It's ridiculous to think you can by building your team through the transfer portal, because that's the equivalent of building a team in the NFL through free agency. You can't do it. Chemistry and climate around a team and a program does matter, even though he continuously denies that it does.
If you just joined us, sitting with us, Joe the Hitman Williams and Sandy Clef, two of the best sports talkers, and I am not qualified to do any of this, but I follow it. And, Joe, do you think, I think I can read your mind, that Coach Prime is going to turn out to be a bust?
Well, I don't think he's a bust. He's a self-promoter. You know, and, I mean, they latched on it. He'll always be a great self-promoter. He's a name brand. He just isn't going to be doing it in Boulder. You know, I think what's going to happen here with Sandy did a pretty good job on that transfer portal business and about the team building concepts, everything. And that's all gone out the window now. And I think college, it's completely changed college athletics and the way that we're used to following college football teams and the way they do business. And how they recruit at the high school level, which seems to, at least here in Colorado, you've got really good high school players who are not being recruited simply because these coaches, in some places where they really do care about their teams, they're going the transfer portal route and saying, well, I'll go ahead and get a guy who's 20 years old, you know, whatever, right. And has already played for 2 years. And instead of taking a chance on an 18-year-old who, although he may be talented, as soon as he gets to campus, you know, some kids settle in. Some kids are able to meet the competition. Some are not. But when you go into the portal and you can pick a guy up that's played somewhere else for 2 years and you've got the backing, you got the cash registers open, because that's going to be the key right there. And including in Boulder, when he leaves, we'll see if the cash register is still full, because I have my doubts about that. And
this is someone, who eschews the notion of player development and therefore player relations. Again, beyond 15 or 20 people, and I think we all know who they are essentially on the CU team, starting with his sons, who, as Joe correctly pointed out, will be gone after this year. Travis Hunter, he treats as if he were another Sanders' son. Player development matters. And he excuses that by saying his refusal to do it. He excuses by saying that, well, I don't have time for that. We got to win right now.
Yeah.
That's, again, a pretty lame justification, in my opinion, for being too lazy to go out and recruit high school kids. He's got bigger priorities. Joe hit on it. Building his brand is always Deion Sanders' number one priority. If creating excitement for a few months comes along with it, great. And it usually does. I want to know what the reaction would have been if CU had started last year 0-3 instead of 3-0 and still finished 4-8. The fact that they finished 3-0 through his expertise as a self-promoter superseded their finishing 1-8. Only Deion could pull that off. Only Deion could make it seem that 3-0 mattered more than 1-8 did.
Only Deion could do that.
Sandy was absolutely right about that. When they beat TCU in the opener, that was the biggest win in CU in 20 years.
Yep.
It just took off. And everybody thought, here we go. It's all the there is no boogeyman. Our guy is here. And we all saw what happened next. And it never went away, even though the wins went away. And they ended up, they couldn't win games. Hell, they couldn't block anybody, you know. And business as usual, though, this spring, I guess. I don't think it'll be sold out, the spring game today, like it was. And as I remember last year, the weather wasn't any better last year than it is today.
It was the same.
Right. Yeah.
It was the same.
Mm-hmm. Our guest, these are great friends, Joe the Hitman Williams and Sandy Clough. I'm Peter Boyles with A Bad Voice, 710 Kane. Yes, we're talking about CU. And again, as the guys pointed out, Coach Prime and CU became far more than a sports show or a sports team. It became, as you talked about, the nightly news. It became, you know, part of and everything. And now that's waned. And even somebody like me that doesn't pretend to know anything about sports, and I don't, but the spotlight is no longer, or am I reading this right, Sandy? The spotlight is no longer on Boulder.
Well, it's still on Boulder, but in a more critical way.
Okay.
And, of course, Deion Sanders whines about that, too. He says we get criticism because we're scrutinized. Well, at this time a year ago, I don't know that he was getting scrutinized. He was getting publicized. And, you know, all these distinctions are foreign to him. He lives by the philosophy, I think he really does, that no publicity is bad publicity.
Sure.
And you can turn even bad publicity into something that's being done only to him.
Yeah.
And I understand he grew up under different circumstances and different from ours, I think. And we've all grown up under slightly different circumstances. But he grew up essentially without a father figure, without expressions of love being directed toward him, and he's made a career of trying to compensate for the love he didn't receive growing up. And I'm probably getting too deep into psychology.
No, I think that's it.
But I don't know. But he's making up for that love now by creating this persona of Prime.
No,
Coach Prime,
yeah.
of Prime Time. This persona he has created, I think, as a compensatory device. And it seems to work for him. But I'll just point to the changeover in the coaching staff as an example. I and Joe, I think, and most everyone, initially was very impressed with the quality of the coaches he was able to bring in. Some of them came with him from Jackson State. But even some of those people who had been with him left end of the year.
I've read
Sean
that.
Lewis,
yeah.
The very successful offensive coordinator, who was as responsible as Deion, in my opinion, for their 3-0 start, because they certainly weren't beating people with defense, especially against Texas Tech and against Colorado State. He was demoted in midseason for no reason other than his son, the quarterback, Deion Sanders' son, the quarterback, Shadur, didn't want to be coached by Sean Lewis anymore. Wanted to be, if you want to call it that, coached by Pat Shurmur, the very unsuccessful former offensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos and a career failure in the National Football League. He wanted to be coached by Pat Shurmur, because Pat Shurmur didn't coach him.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Shurmur let him do whatever he wanted to do. So Deion Sanders is the program. The program is Deion Sanders, and by extension, Shadur Sanders. And I tend to agree with Joe. I don't know that anybody will be reaching out for Deion Sanders in 2025, but for all I know, maybe he'll never coach again after this year.
Yeah.
I mean, building the brand doesn't require that Deion Sanders be a head football coach.
No, it doesn't. The NIL has changed everything, college sports as we know it. Deion would not have been Deion here without the NIL, or without the
Correct.
Money, without they would
Correct.
Never have it, never none of this would have happened.
If you're just joining us, the hitman Joe Williams and Sandy Clough are with us, 710 KNUS. I'm Peter Boyles. Good morning. We're talking about, has the shine come off up at CU? And there was a, like people talk about Beatlemania, but there was a CU mania. And as you pointed out after the TCU game, my grandson wanted nothing but, you know, CU hats and shirts and every little kid, and they looked up to this guy. And as Joseph Heller said, something happened. And you don't, Joe, I think I heard you say they're not going to win many games this year. And so,
well, I mean, that's an opinion.
I understand.
I could.
I don't know. The over-under on wins at the present time is 5.5. They won 4 last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming around to Joe's position. I don't know if it makes any difference if they win 5 or 6. Yes, with 6, they become bowl eligible.
Mm-hmm.
6 is more likely because they're going from the Pac-12, which was a very good football conference last year, to the Big 12 without Texas, without Oklahoma. Not as good a football conference anymore as the Pac-12 was last year. I don't know. He may win some games, but I'll be very curious to watch their opener this year against a lower level opponent that happens to be very good on their level. And I believe that game will be played in Boulder. And if the Buffs embarrass themselves as they did last year on national TV on a Saturday night against Stanford, the bloom will definitely be off the rose.
You know, I'm close to a pause. Yeah, I think you said, Sandy, that no publicity is bad, or you know,
not
you,
for the brand. It
oh
isn't.
Yeah, no, and then these are radio stories. But I don't know if you guys remember John Lego. Hal called him Captain Showbiz, and he was a consultant on the job. And we'd gotten jammed up and gotten a little bit of trouble about some stuff we did on the air, which is so rare for Bob and I. But so Lego said, and I'm waiting to get my lunch. And Lego said, he said, did they spell your name right? And I said,
yes.
He said, did they get the call letters in? And and then he finally said, did they say what time you were on? In other words, there was no such thing as bad ink. But
that's right.
I mean, it was like I thought about that when Sandy said that. Good or bad, but that was one of his – he said, did they spell your name right? And I'm waiting.
Well, here's the exchange that I'll always remember long after Deion Sanders is gone. I will remember because I and some friends were in Fort Worth last year to watch the opener, and we were impressed. If not overwhelmed, we were definitely impressed. It was by far the best game they played all year, as it turned out. But after the game, a friend of ours who works at ESPN, Ed Werder, who used to work here, worked for the Boulder Daily Camera way back in the day. Ed is one of the great reporters in our business, has been for years, probably decades. And Deion knew Ed Werder because during Ed Werder's time with ESPN, he had covered the Dallas Cowboys when Deion was playing in Dallas. So I guess Deion had taken note of some kind of social media expression by Ed Werder in the offseason last year, maybe about a year ago at this time. And Ed Werder characterized Deion Sanders as a celebrity coach.
Wow.
And that's hardly inflammatory criticism.
No.
But Deion took offense and saw Ed Werder at the postgame press conference, and Deion was feeling his oats and perhaps was entitled to do that, and looked at Ed Werder and asked him, do you believe now?
Wow.
And Ed Werder was able to do something right there on the spot that very few of us are able to do on the spot. We think of a response later on, wishing we had thought of it at the time, but Ed Werder is bright, and he is quick. And his reply was, believe in what, coach?
Yeah.
Believe in what?
Yeah.
And that will be on the epitaph of Deion Sanders as head coach at the University of Colorado. Do you believe now? And the response is, believe in what? And that is still the question. What are we supposed to believe?
I got to sell something. I want to come back and talk about Caitlin Clark and everything that goes with that. You put the guys on hold. Joe Williams, the hitman, is here. Sandy Clough, Peter Boyles, open lines in the final hour. All right, guys, you heard me talk about treating low testosterone and how it improves your sleep and workouts and energy levels. But the most important thing is talk about your sex life. And here I am, old veteran of that, and I'm telling you, man, it's a worker. If you're in a relationship or wanting to be in a relationship, a low sex drive is a problem. It's showtime. It's good news. RockyMountainMen'sClinic.com. I urge you to do this. You call them at, if you're an old guy like me, 720-440-7900. 720-440-7900. The cost of an appointment is $99. It includes medical consultations, T and PSA test. If you sign up for the treatment the day of your appointment, your visit's free. They're just amazing, and it works. Schedule a consult with Rocky Mountain Men's Clinic, Colorado licensed medical provider. They'll review your results with you and discuss your options. For real, it works. 720-440-7900. RockyMountainMen'sClinic.com, and tell them I sent you. Morning, everybody. It's almost good afternoon. 42 will be the high. It's really snowing in the city right now. 57 Sunday, Monday, 68 degrees. This is Peter Boyle, 710 KNUS, the Saturday morning show. Our guests are dear friends, Joe the Hitman Williams and Sandy Clough, and we're trying to get them on the show as often as we can. The other one I wanted to talk about, we just got done talking about Coach Prime and CU. Caitlin Clark. I got to tell you something, guys. I think she could be the Joan Namath of women's basketball, but I was glued to those games. I watched that woman. She's amazing. We'll start this time with Sandy. Caitlin Clark, Sandy, your thoughts.
I think she's remarkable. She is a tremendous player. And I think now you're beginning to hear occasionally criticism, picking apart of her game. There have probably been, even in the college game, better basketball players than Caitlin Clark.
Wow.
But there's been no one who's had the effect on a women's game.
Okay.
And here's a mark as to the effect she's had with her spectacular shot making and her leadership skills. She's a great teammate. The effect she has had that is that women's basketball will continue to be very popular for years to come. The women's tournament this year with Caitlin Clark was much more interesting than the men's tournament was.
You know,
much
what
got better ratings.
Yeah, well, I was going to say ratings. The numbers were better. And I'm not much of a sports fan, and you know the so-called March Madness. But it was when I was watching. I make sure when the Hawkeyes were on, I was watching just because I thought.
Watching.
Yeah, no, I really
did.
And
it spilled over, Pete.
Yeah.
It spilled over. It spilled over to other games that also got big ratings. And also, oh, by the way, there was an undefeated champion in South Carolina. South Carolina knocking off Iowa in the championship game. And Dawn Staley, the South Carolina coach, who was a pretty fair player in her own day and is a fantastic coach, I believe Dawn Staley is the best coach in college basketball, men or women.
Hitman, Caitlin Clark.
Young. She will be great for years, and she praised Caitlin Clark after the game. After she, her team had won, she took time to praise Caitlin Clark for not just her on-court performance, but for her off-course off the court effect. And I thought, there you have it. Dawn Staley is as class an act as there is, and she recognized the contributions of Caitlin Clark. With all due respect to the Pat Summits and the Gino Auriemmas, the late, great Pat Summit and Gino Auriemma, who is still doing fairly well as the head coach at UConn, women's college basketball isn't just UConn and Tennessee anymore. In fact, UConn and Tennessee are kind of marginal contenders year in and year out. South Carolina is building a basketball dynasty, but Iowa's on the map, and Iowa will continue to get good players because Caitlin Clark played there. Yeah.
Hitman, Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, Sandy's right about Dawn Staley. I think she's right up there at the top when it comes to coaching basketball. And she was a three-time Olympian. And she, and as Sandy pointed out, she took time out after the championship game, you know, to go over Caitlin Clark, the effect and the popularity that she attributed to her to bring attention to the women's game. Because let's face it, the ratings prior to Caitlin Clark for women's basketball were nowhere near anything like they were.
That's
this
true.
Year. Had never happened before. I know, before Caitlin Clark, look, I never watched women's basketball. It wasn't because I had anything against women, although we all know I better watch out here.
Yep.
I'm going to be back on the firing line on the radio, but get caught in that revolving door again. But Caitlin Clark, she brought the popularity. And when I started watching her play, somebody said, you got to watch this girl play. And she can shoot three-pointers better than anybody on the Nuggets, I tell you that.
Wow.
I'd like to see them invite her to the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. They always have those three-point shootouts.
Yeah.
I'd like to see her take on the ghost of Larry Bird.
The women in general, the premier women shooters, shoot the three ball at least as well as the men do. And I know Steph Curry had a contest this year against one of the women, and it was the most enjoyable part of All-Star Weekend this year was that three-ball shooting contest at the All-Star game, much better than the game, which is a joke. The women's impact on basketball is growing and growing. Now, I'm not predicting that the WNBA will, all of a sudden be getting better ratings than the NBA, although it's interesting. NBA ratings are down 20%, fellas.
I didn't know that.
Ratings down 20%. Women's college basketball ratings through the roof.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, that reading the history of sports and the media, when the Jets got their hands on Joe Namath, it made the network. If my understanding is correctly, was it NBC that had...
NBC.
Yeah. Yeah. And
without Joe Namath, there is no merger.
That's what
there
I'm talking
no
about.
Yeah. We
no,
know it today.
I agree. And
I'll tell you one thing else about Joe Namath, and Sandy will back this to the hilt. There isn't anybody who's ever thrown a better ball than Joe Namath that's ever played.
Oh, he's my guy. He's from Beaver Falls.
Nobody. Yeah, he was an unbelievable player.
And I had a chance to meet him in a recovery thing, and I just told him, I said, "Hey, you know, you were the man." And I got to know Babe Parilli when Parilli was here, and I spoke at his funeral. And
one of the greats.
The great
Babe Parilli,
and the great storyteller, and. He was a great friend. I'd sit and we talked about growing up. And one of the favorite stories, and why I'm doing stories, I don't know, but he was called the Sugar Babe when I was a kid. They went to University of Kentucky.
And played for Bear Bryant.
He's got a story about Bear coming to see him, and him and the black kid, and the black kid's his running back. And they got a job, the city fathers or somebody got him a job cutting lawns in the summertime to give him some pocket money. And he said this, I think he said it was an Oldsmobile or a Buick, something pulls up. This guy gets out. He's from University of Kentucky. And he said, you're going to come play for me. And it was Bear Bryant. And Babe says, what about? And he turned around the other kid and he said, we don't play colored. In other words, the black kid couldn't come to Kentucky. But he had stories. I mean, just great stories. And he was allegedly the guy that when Joe Namath got to the pros, that he helped Joe, you know, become a better QB. But they're from the same place. I mean, they were immigrant kids and blue collar working class kids, Western PA. He was one more story that he told me. He said when he got drafted for the Packers, that's where Vito went. And he said he's sitting at his first training table, and he's looking down the table. He says, this great big guy who's eating with both hands. And I said, who was he, Babe? He said it was Dick the Bruiser. Dick the Bruiser was playing professional football. And he had stories about everybody. But he always said that had Joe not gone to the old AFL, there would have never been a merger. True or false?
Yeah, Namath was the first player, the first professional player to throw for 4,000 yards.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember, this was back in the day when they did not protect the quarterback. This was the day when you could knock receivers down,
yeah,
going across the middle of the field. You can only imagine if Namath came out of the womb 40 years later playing in the days, you can only imagine what he would look like. But back then, it was good enough.
Yeah, it was. And Joe Namath in 1967 was the first quarterback, as Joe said, to throw for 4,000 yards. And his jaw was broken
year
in a game against the Raiders.
Yep.
And they asked Namath about it after the game, and he said, I just bit into a bad steak.
Yeah.
He would not give the Raiders the satisfaction of his acknowledging that they had broken his jaw. He also beat the Raiders that year with the Jets, who weren't nearly as good a team, and he beat the Raiders the next year, 1968, in the AFL Championship game, which every member of the Jets – had said was a much tougher game against a much, much, much better team than the Baltimore Colts team they faced in the Super Bowl and scored the greatest upset of all time against.
Yeah.
Namath was playing without good knees and never missed a game during his first 5 years in the NFL.
Yeah.
He was not in great condition to play every game necessarily, but he never missed a game.
He was a tough.
And the first 5 years in the league, never missed a game with all those knee issues. And also playing half his games at Shea Stadium in New York, which was one of the most inhospitable football venues ever constructed, with the swirling winds of fall and winter. Joe Namath playing in the pristine conditions that exist for the most part today. Can you imagine Joe Namath indoors? Even without good knees, Joe Namath playing indoors today, Joe Namath would have completed 70% of his passes with his eyes closed.
I mean, I met Namath in a sobriety thing, and I just wanted to tell him, how much he meant to me. And then back to Babe Parilli for a second to talk about how tough those guys were. So he's got a full ride to go to the University of Kentucky. He's in. And he's going to play for Bear Bryant. And they played for the championship. It was a Pennsylvania, 3A or 4A or whatever it was. And they won. His team won. And they played like right before Thanksgiving for the championship. And Babe told me the story. And he said the next day he gets a phone call from the quarterback of the team that they beat, who tells him he was lucky that you couldn't do it again. I said, what happened? He said, we climbed the fences, we played the game again, like just in street clothes. He said, we played the game again. His future is made. If he would have been injured, that would have been it. And I said, how'd it turn out? He said, well, we won the game. He said, and then we won the fight. True story. I mean, at least, and you think how tough those guys must really, really be. And
well, Babe Parilli played for Bear Bryant, and he also played not when he was with the Packers initially, but eventually played for Vince Lombardi.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Curry's the only other player I can ever remember who played for Bryant and played for Lombardi.
He was a really good friend. We would sit and talk, and he always had – he would say he was a good storyteller, you know, and it was just great stuff. Joe Williams and Sandy Clef, kind enough to be with us on a Saturday morning. So what happens with the Rockies? I made sure I was going to bring that up as well. Do things continue like this for the Rockies? Joe, you're first.
Well, I think the Montforts certainly hope so. They've got a license to print money down.
Oh, boy. Boy.
However, attendance is down.
Yes, it is.
Attendance is down.
Is it true that they didn't sell out opening day? Is that true?
They did not.
Okay.
They did not sell out opening day, although the TV telecasters suggested they had. That was not true. They did not sell out opening day. They had a nice crowd, but they were under 30,000 for the rest of the weekend, and their attendance has been dropping precipitously. I have suggested that we have a little deal on our little radio show Monday through Friday in which we are now tracking the Rockies' progress against the 1962 New York Mets, heretofore the worst team in baseball history. They finished 40 and 120 in their first year of existence. I am confident that the Rockies will lose at least 110 games. 120 may be a mark that even the Rockies can't reach for number of losses. But they're right now right on pace with the 62 Mets through the first 26, 27 games of the season. Right on pace.
Yeah, they said they asked Casey Stengel after that year when they lost all those games. They asked Stengel, he said, would you care to describe the season in one word? And Casey said, shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
The Rocky season will be described in a lot of ways, but I doubt that Bud Black will say shocking end of the year. Bud Black is not Casey Stengel, and yet I can't imagine that Bud Black is particularly surprised by how bad the Rockies are.
Probably not.
You know, the shame of it is they're two or three decent individual players. And I'll tell you the other thing, though they are on channel 1262, I believe, on my cable system, at least they're on, which is more than you can say, not anymore, now that the playoffs are beginning, every game's on national TV, but during the regular season, it is easier to find the Rockies than it is to find the Denver Nuggets or the Colorado Avalanche.
Our boy Don Zimmer, you know, he was the first guy to ever be photographed in a Met uniform. Our boy Don Zimmer. Yeah.
Is it
Rockies coach?
Is it true? Yeah. Is it true, fellas? I hear this again, that because when the Dodgers come to town, all the Dodgers fans want tickets. When it's the Pirates, it's that, or when it is that, what keeps that team making, as Joe pointed out, had a printing press, is because of everybody that grew up, that now lives in Denver, but grew up on another baseball team.
Well, but the Dodgers and the Cardinals and the Cubs and the Yankees and the Mets, they don't come, and the Red Sox, they don't come to town every week.
True.
There are other teams that aren't nearly as appealing, don't have fans here, and that's when they'll have trouble. And I think they'll probably draw 2 million this year, but if they drop slightly below that, maybe that's the line of demarcation that would allow the Montforts to feel, or Dick Montfort anyway, he's the only Montfort who matters, to feel any sense of shame, which previously he has not felt. A man with utterly no shame.
Wow.
Whatsoever.
Final comment, Joe. Comment on the Rockies.
Hey, I don't have season tickets anymore. And
that's that.
I remember when I did, and, you know, it was fun for a while, but pretty soon it got to be like a job.
Yeah.
And going to the games and. Yeah. I don't know. I used to be when I was a kid, I was a big baseball fan and would not have ever imagined. Sandy, of course, grew up around Major League Baseball, but I grew up in Texas and we didn't have Major League Baseball. So I'd hear the game of the day every once, you know, in the afternoons on the radio, but that's about as close as I ever got, you know, to big league baseball.
Sandy, final comment. Will the Rockies stay this way until the Montfort sell it?
That's a great question. I don't think the Montforts will sell it. I think they'll try to keep it within the family. It's a very sad story. If they won, you know, 80 to 90 games, you know, on a fairly consistent basis, that wouldn't be too much to ask, I don't think, given the resources and the attendance they've got. But they'd draw $3 million a year easily. They'd make more money. If they were just mediocre, if they were just average, if they were just contenders once every 4 or 5 years, they're not. And they refuse to bring in anyone from outside the organization. They call it loyalty. I call it stupidity. And again, deliberate stupidity. I mean, they don't. He doesn't want to know. He had the ridiculous line in a front page column before opening day that Troy Rank wrote for the Denver Post that they didn't consider bringing in someone from the outside to run the organization because Dick Montfort thought that the people he had spoken with from the outside either were unintelligent or were suggesting methods that the Rockies had tried before.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? You talk about insulting the intelligence of the Denver sports community. Way to win fans and influence people, Dick.
You look at the Broncos when Pat Bowlen was the owner, and I used to, and hey, we all, Sandy included, we all had our rounds with Pat Bowlen and Dan Reeves and the back and forth and everything. But there's one thing about Pat Bowlen: if you were a fan of the Denver Broncos, you could not have asked for a better owner. He was willing, absolutely, and he wasn't one of the richer owners in the league either, but he was willing to anything that he thought would help them win, and writing the checks, he did it.
Guys, I'm on the hard break. I'm getting yelled at.
All right, we know what that means.
That means I love you both, and we'll talk ASAP, and I'll get you back. Thanks, Joe. Joe Williams, everyone, and Sandy Clough. Sandy, thank you. Have a good weekend,
folks.
Thanks, guys. All right, we turn around right here, 710 KNUS. Morning, everybody. It's April 27, 2024. It's white out. Looked out the window on a Saturday. I'm Peter Boyles. Good to have you here. 710 KNUS, an hour of open lines will come your way. Dave Williams was with us this morning in the sort of an open challenge, if you would, to he and Dick Wadhams, and Lou's working on that right now. That would be an amazing show. And listen to Joe Hitman, Williams, and Sandy Clough. Now it's us, 303-696-1971. Still getting barraged about these people that really know the truth, how the election was stolen, and I should go listen to other talk radio shows. You know, it's interesting how all of these people have been indicted and how all of them have made deals and with the RICO Act and the rest of it. Why, if the truth were out there with these people you're sending me, then why didn't Fox put them in a witness box and say, and tell that court, you know, instead of settling for 787, why are these people going bankrupt as opposed to because they had the truth? Well, they don't have the truth. And it's interesting to see the indictments. But, of course, I have to go find some obscure guy and learn how to do talk radio. It just simply isn't true. If the truth were there, they'd show it to you. So we have open lines, and I wrote a column. You can go 710knus.com, our website. Click on shows, click on me. And it's entitled A Column That Nobody Likes, Including Me, about the great hatred between Iran and the United States. How did it happen? Talking about the Trump trials. We're talking about anything you want to. It has come up on the other side. It's a whiteout in the city, and it's whiteout on April the 27th. Amazing. You ready, Lou? Hit it. We'll come right back.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.